Welcome home. We are WNST. AM 1570 TASS Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. We are drinking beer. It is the afternoon here, at least. It's not the morning. Not Preakness morning around here. We are out in beautiful Carroll County. We are in Eldersburg. I had a girlfriend here 40 years ago. Uh-huh. I texted her today because I'm out. Eldersburg. I don't come to Eldersburg much. Dante Liberatore's got his joint around the corner. We are here at beautiful 1623 Brewing. I have imported Baltimore County and Dundalk's finest, John Allen, out to sit in, who lives in Howard County. I drove through Howard County to get to Carroll County so that I could have the milk stout here at 1623. This is a tasty beverage. We're going to have some crab dip here. No crab cakes here, although I did get invited to some crab cake places out here. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. I have, these are the brand new tickets, John. I have the Pressure Lock, whammy. And we also have the Lucky Sevens Doubler. I'll be giving these out this week, next week. It'll be at Zeke's Coffee on Friday. We did Deepest Squally last week. We did Costas twice last week in Timonium, and I promised Mike McKelvin, my old pal, that I would come at it. It turns out he's got a whole Essex connection with your former bandmate, Phil Weiser, but Child's Play's getting back together and doing what they do all the time. So I've circled a date on the calendar, and I hit you because we're real friends in the real world. You're like, why do you want me on? And I'm like, dude.
What do we have to talk about? But we get together and we talk for hours.
Yeah, we run out of things to talk about when we're at your pool. And then, like, you come on the air, you're like, saw Jason Isbell last night. He made me well up. He was so unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, we're music people. I hit you about Rod Stewart this week.
Hang on. So you got to back up. Phil, Mike has a connection with Phil.
Phil Weiser,
and you said former bandmate. He's actually
a real bandmate.
He's in the fold again. He's playing with us September 27th, is it?
Let me get my calendar out. I'm too busy drinking,
gosh,
dude.
You bring me to a brewery,
and then you're going to ask me when you're playing? It's in my calendar.
I'm trying to promote.
It's the 27th, right here, September 27th. Yes.
27th at the Wrecker.
It's the weekend Ocean City's got all that stuff going on down there. So if you don't want to deal with that.
No.
Yeah. Well, it's okay. I mean, I'm supposed to be there Friday, but I ain't going Saturday.
All right. Cool.
Well, you went to the boardwalk thing with Leopard a couple weeks ago. You liked it.
I did. It was really impressive. It was a big, there was like, I don't know, almost 60,000 people there. It was a lot of people. It was a lot of walking back and forth between the far stages, you know.
So who'd you saw Leopard. It was like, how many bands?
They sounded great. It was a lot of bands. I saw a little bit of Nickelback. I think I came home. I left, you know. Midway through their set,
I'm pro Nickelback. I'm not anti Nickelback.
He writes hits, right? I don't like all the backlash and the Nickelback hate, you know. But yeah, so
they have great songs. Period.
Great songs.
That's it.
Yeah. So yeah, we saw a ton of bands. We saw Dorothy. I think she's a great up and coming act. She's a great singer. Great songs. She's got a great live band. Hailstorm.
Everybody loves Lizzy, right?
Oh, my God. They were unbelievable. They were
sort of like the modern Stevie Nicks of the rock, kind of working in that direction of the next 20, 30 years, right?
Yeah, but, I mean, like, Lizzy is just a force, you know, to be reckoned with. I mean, the girl, woman, you know, she is a phenomenal singer, you know, and a phenomenal guitar player. And she does it all in heels. You know, like you're watching, I was like,
it's almost like Gene Simmons.
You know, it's like, wow, you know, like that's incredible. And then a lot of times it's like I see award shows, like I'm jumping all over the place here, but the women, a lot of time, they outsing the guys. You know, they're like, when I watch some of the, like, not rock shows, but the maybe the country award shows, you know, I see like the women are spot on singers, and watching Lizzy, I go, oh yeah, like wow, she is beyond, you know. She's
well, I think
phenomenal.
That's one thing. I think from the sports to the rock and roll side. By the way, John Allen here from Child's Play and Stone Horses. We're at a 1623 having some beer, so this could get really out of hand this afternoon. And I got friends coming by to talk about Live Aid and the 40th anniversary. I think the thing that originally reached me to you, other than our friendship and we're kind of together all the time, but was Ozfest and the Ozzy goodbye last weekend. Because you and I went to AC/DC together but apart about 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. We're texting each other about how good it was. And then Ozzy, who obviously has some physical issues, right? And they put this event together, and I didn't think, well, I should hop across the pond and go to that and go see Oasis. And I'm not an Oasis guy, but it looks interesting to me. It looks like something I might want to do. I might want to run up to New York with you and see it just to say I saw it. But the Ozzy ending last week and Live Aid this week has made this show at 1623 a little bit more music-oriented. But the Ozzy thing came at me from nowhere into... It was a weekend. It was going to happen. And then I saw Sammy Hagar was going to be there. And then I saw, like, people from all over the world are coming there. Morello and, like, all of this stuff. And then I saw the set list that day, and I'm like, man, Daniel's gathered in the masses. You know, I'm thinking, well, I should have gone over there for that. I mean, that feels to me to be a Live Aid Zeppelin reunion in our lifetime. Mm-hmm. Some people say Live Aid, or you could say the second Woodstock that happened where everybody gets sick. I think the show in L.A. with the Foo Fighters that Geddy and Alex played 2-3 years ago after Taylor died. There are these seminal shows, but the Ozzy thing for the genre?
Yeah.
It's the Woodstock of metal, and there'll never be another one like it in any other way, and I don't even know what second place would be, right? Like, it was for the genre of music that you've called home in that rock space, Ozzy being sort of the living godfather of all that. It reminds me of when Ted Williams came out in 99 at the All-Star Game. Reminds me of whatever you would do to feat an athlete on the way out. I don't know how rock stars got. We did a pretty good job with Whiteman a couple summers ago. I mean, you know what I mean? That was sort of a legendary, awesome thing that you were a part of.
Yeah.
But the Ozzy thing, we got it. That's why Kicks, I hit you. I think that
Steve,
was it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. One of the things that we used to talk about all the time that used to not baffle us, but it was just. We would marvel at was Ozzy's ability to keep turning on younger generations. He would
bring in people along.
Yeah,
right?
He would bring in new generations over and over and over again. And just so beloved, you know. And it would have been cool to go to Birmingham and see that happen. You mentioned Led Zeppelin. There is a little Zeppelin connection there with Sabbath and Zeppelin, being that John Bonham and Robert Plant are from that same area, so they all knew one another, and
Sharon.
So there is sort of, you know, that bond.
Sharon's the genius in this, though, right? I mean, you from a rock star angle, where you had bands that made it, bands that didn't make it, good managers, bad managers. Mm-hmm. You know, you've always been on the cusp of all of that. How you're managed and how you're produced. I mean, every time I hear Def Leppard or AC/DC, I think of Mutt Lang, and I think they must have been well managed to some degree, despite Bon Scott's issues and whatever. Yeah. But like the notion that you would be so well managed. Ozzy was so well directed. And I don't think it was Ozzy, right? It was Sharon was the mastermind, or there was a mastermind behind everything that happened sort of after the Dove and the Bat and Black Sabbath and Ronnie James Dio, which we're going back 40 years in. Reality TV, Ozfest, let's have our own label. No, let's have our own tour. Let's find younger bands. All these things that he's brought his whole lifetime with him really paid off last week. That was an amazing day, and I feel like a jerk for not going now.
Yeah, you know, you hit on something, but I mean, and that's the thing. Like, you never know the balance, but there has to be talent first and foremost. So Ozzy had the talent, right? And then Sharon just was a force to be reckoned with, and she brought that talent to the masses, even, you know, bigger, like you said, with the reality shows and whatnot. Her story is interesting too. Her father was Don Arden, who was arguably the godfather of music management and booking in England in the 60s.
She came from it.
She saw it firsthand, and she
was the son of a ball coach, right? Literally, right?
So
this is why I love having John. He's such a researcher, because you've read for being from Dundalk, you read a lot of books. You read about rock and roll.
Yeah.
You know about rock and roll the way I know about sports, but you respect my music knowledge. A lot of times you'll call me and ask me for things, and I'm like, dude, you've read the books on all of this, but we really are at a seminal time as I and I'm going to bring this out. I'm going to do this right now because I want to promote what's going on later, but I got to be really careful because I got beer here. And I've got memorabilia here. These are my Live Aid tickets from this is 40 years ago this week, right? This ticket here is probably like a $500 ticket because it's in really good shape. I've kept it bound forever. So I have my Live Aid tickets. This one's a little bit more messed up. This must have been in the shower with me down on the field during Crosby, Stills, and Nash playing Southern Cross. So
Ticketron,
baby. Ticketron. That's what I'm talking about here. So these are my mementos, and I have a Live Aid bumper sticker, and presciently enough, I saw Live Aid. So these are real. And then this is also the Philadelphia Daily News. I was a newspaper guy. They would replate the front of their editions. This is the Feed the World. This is to tell you where your seat is. It says, a souvenir guide to Live Aid. The drawing of John F. Kennedy Stadium will help you find your seat. There were no seats on the field. But the back here, I don't know what the Phillies did. Oh, owner's timing for sets up a strike. They're having another strike. And the Braves are bad and the Phils are worse. And there's Nolan Ryan. So great Rich Hoffman.
So wait a second. There were no seats on the field.
No, it was GA.
On the floor.
It was GA.
Oh, yeah. Well,
it was
right.
A stadium. It was GA.
Well, that's what I meant. I was confused.
So it was GA on the floor.
So there were people down there.
If you look at my seat was 10 reserve WN. Right. I was in row 60.
All right.
If you look at my Live Aid seat, I was under the second E in Feed the World under the press box at about the 40-yard line.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched most of the show from there. I mean, they were just wooden benches. I mean, it's an old, 100-year-old stadium then.
Yeah.
That's why it's gone. So all of this for Live Aid. But here's the real cool part. This is where you come in. This is where my buddy John gets involved. My friends
Choice
Richard
Magazine.
And David are going to – Abraham's going to be coming over. They are the guys from Pikesville that I used to camp out for concert tickets at Reisterstown Road Plaza in 82, 83, 84 with Ron West, our friend Ron we grew up with. And this is the Choice Magazine from August of 1985 with the Hooters on the cover. Motley Crue, Live Aid, concert calendar, Kicks. I don't. Some of these, obviously Tears for Fears and Hooters are big again.
Reptile House was a Baltimore band.
I had this in my clips. And Mike McKelvin will be here later to talk about WBAL and Chris Thomas and Phil Weiser and all these connections. Here's the old 98 Rock ad on the back, okay? Baltimore for Baltimore. This is Sheffield Studios. This was Baltimore for Baltimore singing some version of We Are the World. Keith Brewer's got to be in there, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Whiteman's probably in there.
I'm in there somewhere.
You're in there?
Yeah.
You did this?
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
I did that.
Well, hold on. Where are you? You're in this picture.
Probably in the back
you
gotta somewhere.
You got to be. What is that?
I should be sitting on the floor.
Come on, dude.
Because I'm so short. You know, like the school pictures, they always put those shorties.
I see Brian with the hat on there. There's Brian right
Brian's
in front.
Brian's there. Welcome Home. It was for the
May of 84, representing types of different music.
Yeah.
Home is where the help is. Inspirational song. You sang on it. Songs writers John Palumbo. I know him.
Yep.
I didn't even.
Wow.
Yeah. I didn't even know this until I just pulled it out a second. I didn't look at it. Yeah. What I was looking at was I found this, and I remembered the Live Aid thing over the weekend, and I'm like, I wrote a really, really awful review for this magazine for Jamie Russell. Do you remember this magazine?
I do.
Choice,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Lasted maybe a year or two.
I think the
David Russell and Jamie Allen were Madeline Scarpula wrote a whole bunch of stuff.
Right.
And my name is here, Nestor Aparicio.
Sam Prager. He produced some Child's Play demos. Actually.
Okay.
He was the one that basically facilitated us getting the record deal with Chrysalis. So photographer Joe Trout, he wound up going to, I'm drawing a blank now.
This is 40
Eric Sokol's
years old.
Magazine.
Okay, the things
Rocks,
in here.
Rocks Magazine.
Guitar Exchange, the New Girards with
nice.
Bands. But here's the Ravens played there on the 10th of August. So I looked through Hooters, Story, Madeline Scarpula. I'm looking for my stupid review, which was really terrible. I mean, I was 16 years old, John. I was Kicks Itching for More is a Kicks story here,
Madeline.
As you can see. Madeline wrote about Kicks. Mm-hmm. So this is one of the early incarnations.
What
of this.
Did you review?
I did Live Aid.
Oh, okay.
I wrote a review of Live Aid. It's the summer of 1985. I'm 16 years old, and here is my live, and it's terrible. Please don't read it. It's very embarrassing. Well, I sort of panned things I shouldn't have and said all sorts of stupid things, but the wild part about the Live Aid piece is I pull this up, and I don't even want to bend it because it's so pristine and important to me, and I'm sure very valuable on the internet for this reason. The New Desert Lounge.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
Remodeled to rock with the grand opening party with Child's Play, September 13th and 14th, 1985. Yeah. There it is. And the Child's Play ad is on the same page as my. You saw it on TV, but what was Live Aid really like? So this is my on-the-cuff review.
Yeah.
It's 28, 30 inches a copy. And
we used to call the Desert Lounge the Deserted Lounge.
Sounds like you have great memories.
Yeah, it was it was appropriately named. Like there was tumbleweed rolling across the dance floor. Like no one went there. Everybody went to Network up the road.
So I will make fun of myself when David and Richard are here because they're going to say, "What do you remember?" And I'm like, "What did I write? What did I write that was stupid?" I haven't read it yet because I started to read it, and it was probably like a song that you, like, you don't like Rat Race, do you? You really don't like Rat Race, do you? Be honest with me.
Well, we actually have been playing it, but I don't like how it turned out sonically. Now that I've got more experience in the studio, there's a bunch of things that I would do differently.
So you're a little cringy. If you saw the video come on right now on the big screen, would you be super proud of it and lean into it, or a little like it could be better? And this is your personality.
The video's fine. Okay. I mean, you know, it's it was interesting. The guy who directed it wound up going on to he had a huge career, still going strong. Gore Verbinski. He was doing videos, and then the bottom dropped out of, you know, the music business. And
who else did he do when you were bragging about? Gore did my video. He did The Warrant. He did something else, right?
I don't think he did any rock videos that you would know, but cut to a few years later, I'm laying in bed watching the Academy Awards, and there was this nomination for Best Film or something, and I hear a nominee, Gore Verbinski, and I was like, what?
He's up for an Oscar.
I'm like, that dude, he directed our video. What happened? For The Mexican, he was the director for that big independent film with, you know, James, a guy from Sopranos and Brad Pitt and all, and I was like floored. But he wound up doing the Caribbean, Pirates of the Caribbean
As
franchise.
Floored as I was when I found out 1985, writers, M. Allen, J. Allen, and I'm like, you know. John Allen is here. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. So I'm cringy about the Live Aid thing, but I...
What about other reviews that you've done back in those days?
Well...
I remember one for Van Halen, I think, where you were really, really sticking it to David Lee Roth for all his extracurriculars on the records.
I stuck it to David Lee Roth because I saw him play with Cinderella down at the arena and I panned him. That's what it was.
Well,
he didn't invite me to Club Dave either. So that at that point in my life, I was a little upset about all that. But well, you were a part of a bill with David Lee Roth, right?
Yeah, M3 this past spring. Yeah, it was great to see a guy out there applying the boards at 70, whatever he is. You know?
Well, you know, people criticize that, and they, you know, whatever it was.
Well, everybody wants to see the performers as they were when they were 24
years
old.
Yeah, I want to see Cal Ripken in 1995. That's why I got video. He can't do that either, right?
Right.
And Ozzy can't do it either. And I think that's what made, to bring it back to the Ozfest a couple weeks ago, these incredible 40 years ago, the Live Aid thing happened, and everyone had a story about it this weekend. Every band that's still alive remembers everything. Thomas Dolby sat with me and told me he was the band conductor for Bowie. Mm-hmm. So you asked me about things that made me cringe a little bit. The day that David Bowie died, my wife had just survived and she was still in peril. She was really struggling. It was early 2016. It was January 16. I found the audio and I listened to it and I listened to his voice with me. And you can listen to it on Baltimore Positive, and it's a 20-year-old version of me talking to him about Tin Machine, and he was coming through. But I had panned his Sound and Vision tour the year before.
Mm.
Bowie leaves audience. Boo for Bowie was the headline. I didn't write the headline. Bowie leaves audience flat. Mm-hmm. And it was this picture of him, and it was a review. It was a front page review of David Bowie. Now, I'm 20 years old when I write it.
For the Sun?
For the Sun, mm-hmm. Evening Sun. So he came around a Sound and Vision tour, probably was the summer 89, and by 91, he was doing Tin Machine. Mm-hmm. So 91, he comes around, and I asked for an interview with the great David Bowie. I knew the publicist. She set it up, and the call comes in. You can listen to it. It's so funny. It's, "Hello, I've got a collect call from Mr. David Bowie. Will you accept?" Mm. "Yes, yes, yes. Yes, yes, yes." More like this. Mm. "Hello, love. It's David Bowie." So he knew I panned him.
Yeah.
And all of the 30 minutes, but it took the day he died for me to read, to listen to it and realize he was speaking to a music critic who panned him. And I said to him in the conversation, very awkwardly in my own way, because it wasn't made for radio. I wasn't a radio guy at all. It was just an interview. I said to him, I said, "Well, I was, you know, I was, I don't know if you know, but like when you came through 2 years ago, you seemed bored with your material." He says, "Well, I was. I was bored. I was, you were correct." So this is what he says to me. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking to myself, do I cringe? I cringe now because that concert, that 89 Sound and Vision tour, mm-hmm. was the greatest hits. He took the guitar player, give me the name. He goes around all the time. He was with Rungert a couple years ago. His famous guitar player. Not Reeves Grabral, the one before him. Not Ronson. I'm trying to think of who it was. Anyway, I shook his hand at Ramstedt 2 years ago. Either way, Adrian Belew. Adrian Belew went out with him. So it was Adrian Belew's vision of the Bowie catalog.
Okay.
And I have the Tokyo Dome pro shot of it. I've watched that thing 1,000 times on a ripped DVD, mm-hmm. and I love that show.
Right.
But in 1989, the night I went to Meriwether, I thought it felt a little, it felt like he was going through the motions.
And then he admitted to me that. How long had they been on tour at that point?
I don't know. It was a Sound and Vision tour.
I've seen.
But it was his greatest hits tour. It was all of his songs.
I've seen that happen, especially when guys are at the end of a very long tour. And they've got 4 or 5 days left, and they're getting ready to go home to England. And they're like,
"I'm done playing fashion. I'm done playing whatever I'm
playing." I
don't
know about him, but I've seen it happen with other acts rolling through Baltimore. And I don't know if it's because Baltimore is considered a, you know, third time through the United States market, you know, smaller market, and they're just like, "Okay, this is mop-up duty, and we're going to play the Civic Center." And it was my first time seeing this band, and the singer just did not give a crap. You know, he was like, I don't know if he was drunk, I don't know if he was, but he was just over it. And he said from the stage, he said, "We've got 3 days before we go home to England. And
I just want to be done."
Yeah, I was very disappointed. But then the next year, the next tour, they blew me away. He was phenomenal. Beginning of the tour at the Cap Center.
Right.
In outside of D.C. So we're all human, you know. Everybody has good and bad
nights. What was your worst night? Did you go on stage one night with diarrhea? Did you go on stage one night completely hungover, not remember? Well, I'm just thinking, like, I mean, you're in town and you're at the Agora and you're playing in Cleveland and you got to play. I mean, that's that.
So
you know, like,
this is
as my dad would say from Dawn, like, you don't get a scratch. Yeah. I don't get a scratch.
Well, so like, you know, being a drummer, you didn't. You know, it's okay. It doesn't matter. You know, like if you're sick or whatever, unless you're really deathly ill, you can still play. But now that I'm a singer,
a different game.
It's a different ball game. And we had Charm City Devils. We had success with Man of Constant Sorrow. We were working the second single, or starting to, and we had been on the road since April of 2012, with little breaks, maybe a week home or 2 weeks home, and we were rolling all the way up through the end of the year, and I started to get sick, and we were supposed to jump on this other.
And you hadn't been a singer before. This is like your early being out on the road doing it every night, right? And
By this point, I didn't start singing until about 2008 or 9.
This is 12, you said, right?
This is 12. Okay. So I've got a few years under my belt. And but man, like so we had come home for in between one of these legs, and Jason got sick. And we were still roughing it. We were in a van with a trailer. And I said, "Okay, well, you're sick. You get in the back. I'm going to sit in the front. And then slowly the sickness moved through the van. You know, Anthony and Victor Carrera, they got it first, and then finally it got to me. And we had to wind up canceling a whole leg of the tour in December with a band that's management was our radio department at our record label that we had just signed with. So we pissed off that band's management and in turn pissed off our record label because I couldn't even talk. There was nothing. Like we were playing the Stone Pony was the last show that I did on that run. And we were playing with Hinder and Nonpoint. And I went to do sound check and I went to sing, you know, the Man of Constant Sorrow, and it was like nothing came out. And there's nothing worse, man, when you're a singer and you can't do it.
That's why I don't shake hands with people. I haven't had a sore throat in 15 years since my wife got sick.
Yeah.
And I'm a fist bumper. Mm-hmm. I had sore throats. Sore throat and radio, forget it.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
I sound like you get in the car, you're listening to me, I sound like I'm dying. I don't want to do that.
Right.
But it's a very real thing. I mean, yeah. I think for any band that has to cancel, you know, illness, we had COVID through, you know, the 2 years of that where, I mean, I saw so many disjointed bands. I mean, I saw Springsteen without Steve one night, without Nils and without, you know, members of the band. I saw John Mayer show up at Madison Square Garden literally 3 weeks into the tour in 21, walks out on stage and says, "All right, folks, I've got an acoustic guitar tonight. I'm at Madison Square Garden. I don't want to disappoint anybody, but my band's all sick. They all have COVID, and I'm just going to do what I do." And then Questlove showed up at 9:45, like showed up literally in an Uber because they're in New York, and walked onto the stage, and they wound up doing like 10 songs.
Nice.
Because Questlove could do it.
Yeah.
I did, you know, Vultures and a bunch of stuff. But, like, I saw Pearl Jam without the drummer. Well, you up for that gig? Or no? New gig? But Matt Cameron got COVID, and Eddie Vedder, they're in Oakland, two nights in Oakland, and they had already I'd had that ticket for a year and a half through COVID. I'm in Oakland. They didn't cancel. Eddie Vedder's daughter's favorite band was a band in Marin County. Mm-hmm. It was a kid with a drummer.
Or Marin County.
Marin or Marin?
Marin.
Marin? Okay, mm-hmm. Marin. Marin, let that marinate.
Come on, man.
He brought in this
Bobber pronunciation.
16, 17-year-old kid that was a drummer in his daughter's favorite band, and they came in, and they just did the greatest hits all
night. Well, you know the story about Keith Moon.
No.
He I think he did so many pills in this before this one huge show, probably like a stadium gig in the 70s, and he fell off the back of the stool and was out cold. And they couldn't wake him up. And Pete Townsend was like, "Is there anybody in the audience that can play our songs?" Some guy raised his hand, came up, and he played the show.
And that's that. It's funny you would mention that because I have my belt buckle today. You ready? This is my belt buckle.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this
old
is
Roger.
I'm not going to let everybody look at my crotch, but I brought this.
You made me do it.
underwear. Yeah. So this is my Roger Daltrey belt buckle, and I actually wore this for Richard Abrahams, who's going to be my guest in the last hour. My live aid friends. So Richard and David, we used to camp out for concert tickets, and they were Who guys. So they big Who people. And I befriended Richard and David. They were the first two Jewish friends I ever had, being a Dundalk kid. 1981. I'm like 12, 13, and we became just great. I mean, I was in their kitchen. Their mother would make me breakfast, and we would camp out for concert tickets all the time. And
that was a great place to camp out because there were no lines.
There were no lines. That's
like if you
we went
to Golden Ring Mall,
how do you think I wound up in the first row? David Bowie on the Sirius Moonlight.
We would go to. We'd show up at Golden Ring Mall. And there would be like
down into two levels of parking.
Right. There'd be 500 hippie, you know, metalheads, earth dogs, all lined up. And I was like, ooh.
Well, yeah, Richard and David.
We're not getting good tickets.
40 years later, they went to Live Aid in London. Mm-hmm. And I went to Live Aid in Philly. And they have David passed out, got thrown over the barricade, met Elton John and George Michael. Like all these great stories. So they're going to be here later. We're going to tell some Live Aid stories. My best Live Aid story is you asked me if I've written anything else that is cringeworthy. or things that make me cringe all these years later. I'm incredibly proud of almost everything I've done publicly on radio for 27 years here at the station. It'll be 35 years in December that I've been on the air, or 34 years. But my writing as a younger person, I was 16 years old when I wrote this.
Right.
Anything I wrote when I was 16 makes me cringe now. Right. Like, even some of the reviews and some of that stuff when I was 18, 19, 20, I mean, I'm 56 now. So it's like there's a point in all that. And I showed it to my wife. She's like, you shouldn't cringe. Be proud that, like, you did this. And I'm like, I'm so unproud of it that I can't read it. I haven't read it yet.
Yeah.
I mean, literally haven't. I'm going to read it when Richard and David get here because I want to. They're going to tell me about London and they're going to say, what was Philly like? And I'm like, well, I wrote this thing when I got back the day after I got back. So this is what I thought then and what time would tell us that we've all lived 40 years.
Right.
And we got our ticket stubs to prove and all that. But
man, memory is maybe rose-colored the experience more, you think?
The thing I remember the most about that day was in the morning, Jeff, my stepbrother, and my then mother of my child, Michelle, Barry's mother. It was summer of 85. I had three tickets. Don't ask me how I got three. I don't even know how I got the tickets. I think I went to Ticketron and, like, you could get a ticket because it was like there were 100,000 tickets and there was no online. You know, I went and got tickets. So I wound up with these tickets thinking this was going to be a big deal. And then the lineup kept changing, as you remember. We graduated 6 weeks before that. So this is a big summer. July of 85. It was so big, you guys were playing the New Desert Inn. I mean, that's how big it was.
Desert Lounge.
Come on, whatever. Get it right. Where was that, by the way? What is that now?
It's like a contractor.
What is
kind
it?
Of business.
What was it?
What do you mean?
Where was it?
It's Pasadena. It's Mountain Road.
So it wasn't the Capricorn.
No.
It was Mountain
Road. The other side of town.
Okay, so but it not. It, did it become Network? No, it was a different kind of place.
Network
right?
was Rivera Beach.
Okay,
and the further. If you went
it was
further
a sandbar,
down,
sandbar wasn't it before
sandbar,
that?
Sandbar, yeah, right? Before okay. that, it was something else before that too. Like, Vinny had this great business model. Like,
Vinny Valentine, we're talking
yeah.
About.
Like once the club kind of got a little tired, he would shut it down for a month and rehab it and rebrand it basically.
Rumblefish.
That yeah. Well, at first I think it was so it was Network and then it was AL Gators and then.
It had another
then
name.
Then Daytona's.
Daytona's. I knew it had another name. Right.
So, yeah. So, like, it was, you know, pretty smart. He would inject new life into the club, like, every 7 or 8 years.
Same management, new branding.
Yep.
Something
yep.
like that.
The term didn't even exist then, rebranding.
Well, my Live Aid memory of all of it is I have the DVD and, I, you know, the six CDs. And, obviously, the Zeppelin, they didn't like anything about
right.
that. They didn't want it out. I don't remember that poorly, and I remember it vividly being there. I remember lots of parts of it. You and I went to see Simple Minds together with our wives 3 weeks ago, and you're like, you ever seen Simple Minds? I'm like, no, never seen them. They played Live Aid. I saw them. Ozzy, you ever seen
you
Ozzy?
Forgot.
Yeah, a couple times. Ozzy played Live Aid in Philadelphia
right.
with Black Sabbath
right.
early in the day with Tommy, the whole deal, right? Mm. So I saw Black Sabbath, I guess. I mean, I saw him.
Tony,
so I hadn't thought about that. But during the day, that day, Madonna was the biggest deal. Madonna was the biggest star in the world.
Right.
And she played it 4 in the afternoon in her green jacket. Mm. Come on. So seeing Madonna that day, I was really looking forward to that. And Led Zeppelin. I mean, seeing that reunion was a big deal.
Do you remember
deal.
What the reaction was of the crowd when Zeppelin played?
Reverent, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a Philadelphia rock crowd at JFK Stadium in 1985.
Well, because I ask because that book that I always talk about Zeppelin that I read and reread and reread.
It was like
and
royalty.
Reread.
It was royalty.
Yeah,
literally.
And it talks about that. The writer says how everyone stopped. You know, everybody backstage stopped.
Everyone was waiting for Led Zeppelin.
Yeah,
I would agree with that wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
The thing I remember the most, and it's not on the DVD somehow, the song is missing. Mm. Crosby, Stills, and Nash, who I saw Crosby, Stills, and Nash. I'd seen Crosby, you know, so seeing that sort of act, Neil Young played that day. I was in the showers. They had erected on the 15, 20-yard line in the back of the end zone.
Oh, like Mr. kind
of things. They had, you know, like barrack showers that misted.
Yeah.
And I was up at the 50-yard line on the Broad Street side, on the stage right side, and I saw the misters, and I walked down there at, whenever Crosby, Stills, and Nash played, maybe 11, 12 in the morning, because I was stinky and it was hot and it was getting hot. And I went down, and all I remember is being in the showers when they were singing Southern Cross. You know, you have a moment. You ask me what I remember that day. I remember being in that shower during Southern Cross, and I remember Madonna. And, you know, I remember, like, Rob Halford with the motorcycle coming up on stage.
Oh, Priest.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. Like, when you think about the Cars played. The Cars played Drive. I mean, so there were so many bands. But it's Live Aid and 40 freaking years ago, dude.
Yeah.
40 years ago. You don't remember anything about the New Desert Lounge gig, do you?
Not that one, no. Like, little bits and pieces of, like, I remember playing certain songs. I remember we played there for New Year's one year, and the girl I was seeing came down, and we jumped in the car, and she had to meet friends at Hammerjack's.
Okay.
And Hammerjack's stayed open, like, all night long.
Imagine
trying to
find a friend at Hammerjack's. We didn't have texts. Well, we didn't have beepers.
Right. Well, in addition, it was, like, Pasadena was fogged in. And I had no clue how to get to Hammerjack's from where we were. We went up on Ritchie Highway.
They didn't build 97 yet.
No. And we were driving north on Ritchie. I knew that much. And we finally made it to Hammerjack's. But it was pretty cleared out by then. But it was like 3 or 4 in the morning, you know. And somebody found like a $100 bill on the ground. Like, you know, I don't know. I don't remember if she ever found her friends or not. I guess she did.
It'd be like saying, hey, I'm going to be in Ocean City this week. I hope you find me.
Yeah. Well, that was our senior week.
Right, yeah. Just walk up and down the boardwalk till you run into who you need. But we're in a different era. John Allen is here. He is obviously with Child's Play as well as Stone Horses. What's Stone Horses doing? What do you got happening?
Working on music. I was recording
I was in his
week.
Basement last week, and you're freaking deaf, dude. I mean, that's all I'm going to say. I sat in your thing, and it just – it blows me away what modern musicians and artists do now. Like your software, your television screen – it's probably like people thinking I'm still doing AM radio and I show up and I set up and I do this. I'm like, it's not kind of like that anymore, right? So it's just different than
kids are making, you know, records in their bedrooms now. I've got a lot of old school stuff. I've got a lot of analog tube gear, you know, preamps and old school things
you
like
that. You
get
better sounds out of that? Is there anything you can do AI-wise to make it sound like a hi-hat the way you want it to or no?
There are a lot of drum programs out there that I don't know how to use them, but they're...
You know how to use sticks.
There's good stuff, yeah. There's good stuff out there that people are using, but years ago, Mitch said to me, he's like, I asked him something about miking a guitar cabinet. He was like, why are you still miking guitar cabinets, man? He's like, use these different plugins or whatever.
He's got those LA tricks.
Well, and I think that he's thinking... these are song demos or whatever that I'm creating, but I start recording with the thought process that
it's the end game, right?
Yeah, if I get it, if it sounds great, I'm just gonna have it mixed by someone, or I'm gonna mix it, and it's gonna wind up out, you know. So,
you're a functional musician. Is that what you'd say at this point?
Yeah, depending on your opinion.
But you're not farting around. You're making stuff that you want people to hear.
Yeah,
it's not a hobby.
Right. No,
I mean, it's
not a hobby.
People come up to me and they want to talk sports. I'm like, grab a mic because I'm not going to sit here and give you my thoughts on the Oriole pitching for the 8th time today.
Yeah,
I did that when I took phone calls. I'll do it once and I'll put it out. Yeah. It's going to be the same opinion 8 different times, you know, 8 different ways.
Yeah.
The same thing with you. Like, if you got a sound you want, get what you want, right?
Yeah, I love it. And I'm playing a lot more guitar now. So
I told Gina Shock you didn't know how to play the guitar, so you were really offended. I'm sorry, man. I think of you as like a drummer and a singer.
I don't think I was offended.
You played a piano too?
I tried.
See, I don't know this either. What else don't you know about your
When I was playing with Gina playing guitar, I really wasn't playing a whole lot then. I'm playing a lot more now. I'm playing live. In addition to the high frequencies that I lost with all the drums, all the cymbals and such, now I'm working on losing my mid-range too with the guitars,
nice.
You know, really loud.
Nice.
So, I won't have any hearing left. But, I think the older I get, the more I feel like I've got to continue to learn, you know, to increase skills. So I'm getting better.
I'm working on AI all summer just because I'm a writer and doing the work I do. Just how can it assist me? How can it help me?
Right.
Instead of fighting it, work with it.
Right. So like our bass player for Child's Play, Phil, he has he's in the tech world. He's, you know, he works for Paramount and, he's using AI a lot now, and I'm hoping to glean some some knowledge teach from me, him. Teacher, yeah. Yeah. But I will say he tried to send us all a group email the other day, and it didn't really work. I didn't understand what he was saying. He told AI, "I need to reply."
So it was a hallucination.
To the guys,
AI hallucination.
And it said, "I need to reply to these guys because we're trying to schedule rehearsals." Right. So I was like, "Well, what does this mean?" I had to write him back. Like, are these dates you're available?
AI brain farts, apparently. Yes.
Yeah. It'll get better as it evolves.
Well, I'm going to drive it this summer. I'm going to learn. Yeah. When are you playing? 27th. Just the only thing you got is Child's Play. That's it. Right,
September 27th. We're about to announce a Stone Horses date. It's in the western part of the state, and there'll probably be a Baltimore show soon because I'm working on music. I'm hoping to get another release out soon. So yeah, but yeah. I mean, and
you playing that Kix gig out there at the casino? Are you doing that at the lake? Or you know?
What lake?
The Kix always play the the Rocky Gap.
Right off of 70
yeah,
or 68.
Yeah.
That's a good gig. That would be great.
Whiteman's he's doing my gig now. He's doing a talk show now. Right?
Yeah.
He's
the podcast.
Podcast.
Yeah. It's great because he you know, I think the chains are off. You know, he doesn't have to worry about
getting a gig.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's like he's super honest on this thing, and I love it. I love watching it. I love the stories.
I'm finally
reading
Getty Lee's book.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Cool. I mean, I'm going to get to Rick Emmett's book before it's all over with. But
The author that wrote that Zeppelin book I keep talking about, it's called When Giants Walk the Earth.
He pimps this book all the time.
The author's his name's Mick Walls. I'm reading a Jimi Hendrix.
Why don't we get Mick Walls on the show, and you could talk to him?
You should. He's fantastic.
Anybody wants to hear more John on the show? Email me ness@baltimorepositive.com. I got Paul with him, and I know his wife too. John Allen is here. We are at 1623 Brewing. I knew if you added beer to John and I, this could get good. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I have freshies to give away. I actually have a handful of these Back to the Futures that I'm still getting rid of here today. I'll also be on Friday morning at Zeke's Coffee, so stop by in the morning. Press your luck and Lucky Sevens double. Which one you want? Because you get one.
Sevens.
Your Lucky Sevens. There you go. John Allen here from Stone Horses and Child's Play. And I'm going to... you know, I got to get McKelvin in here at some point because we're going to do the Phil White. Before I get him in, I'm just going to have you do the thing on the air that we somehow did backstage at Meriwether at Simple Minds with your wife and you there because I had to ask you this important question, and I want to ask it on the air. Nobody knows this about you, so if anybody knows John, John was a writer in the song 1985. Mm-hmm. I did not know that and embarrassed myself when I sat with John in Cleveland like 15 years ago. We played X Games. What was that thing out there?
Oh, Gravity Games.
Gravity Games. You and I went to a Ravens game, and he and I are sitting at a Ravens game. I'm like, John, I heard this new song. It's called 1985. I really dig it. I wrote that, man. And I'm like, what? So now every time I hear it, when I heard she was going to shake her ass on the hood of Whitesnake's car, which is a line I use for my wife all the time, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
She was actually out washing the car because of bird shit all over our car, and she had the thing out. I said, are you going to shake your ass on the hood of Whitesnake's car? So that has become, it's not an iconic phrase, but it is for me.
Mm-hmm. Mitchell would be very happy to know that.
You did not write that line.
I did not write
that line. I wanted you to write that line. God, you're from Dundalk.
No, I think that was
Mitch's. He's not even from Dundalk.
I think that was that was Mitch's line.
David Coverdale's a great follow on Twitter, too, by the way. He's got a hell of a sense of humor.
He I don't know where he finds his stuff, but it's great, yeah. It's inspiring. Yeah, there are some funny people out there, man, on the interweb. Speaking of inspiring, we were talking before we went on air about Jason Isbell. Last night.
Oh,
at
right.
Pier 6.
Okay.
So he's got a local guy from Columbia, Derry.
I saw your picture with him. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So he's played on a bunch of Stone Horses stuff. He's Jason's keyboard player, and they were just fantastic last night. Such a good band. Such great
people
songs.
People love them. Sports writers specifically. The guys I know who cover the NFL and cover sports really love Jason. I got to get into this, mm-hmm. right? I'm missing out.
It's really good.
I'm so not good with new music, dude. Yeah. I'm just such an old fart. I'm sorry. Yeah.
I'm there with you. You know, we are inundated with new music now, and it acts the opposite way. It's like harder to find stuff now than it was.
Well, it doesn't
come
to me. You got to seek it out, unless you're Spotify, you know, whatever listener. And you and I got into a fight about a year. Maybe we were going to Marcus King like a year and a half ago when 100.7 completely effed their format up, and they were playing like Metallica and Red Hot Chili Peppers every song. And I'm like, what is this? And you're like, dude, you can't play Kansas and Boston Sticks forever. And I'm like, want to bet?
Well, you know, the criteria for classic rock, I think, is 20 or 25 years old, right? So, yeah, you just said Live Aid was 40 years ago, bro. I mean, like, you know, that stuff, Guns N' Roses, it's classic rock now, whether you like it or not, you know?
I love Guns N' Roses.
And old Metallica is classic rock now, whether you like it or not.
Every word in your song that you wrote that's an iconic song in 1985, you mentioned not a big fan of Limp Bizkit. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. I'm not a big fan of Limp Bizkit, right? What are the other words? I mean, because the song... So, I could be I'm the husband of the woman that shook her ass on the hood of Whitesnake's car.
Well, so what's interesting is that we wrote our SR-71 version, right? And we put it out in Japan. The guy that put that deal together for the Japan release, he was managing the producer who was working on the Bowling for Soup record. And he came to us about a month after our release came out and said, hey... Bowling for Soup really needs a first single for this record, and I was thinking 1985 would be good for them. What do you guys think? And me and Mitch were talking about it, and I said, that might, you know, lead to another domestic record deal for us. Who knows? You know, that never materialized. But
well, as you get older, you'd rather be a writer than a rock star, right? I mean, money-wise.
Some people.
I mean,
you can sit home and not have to worry about the hassle of touring.
Michael Bolton was writing hits forever and then went out and decided to shake his ass, right?
But, like it was. Yeah, but I, you know, I've got this, you know, hole in my soul that I need that instant gratification.
You're
being
a rock
on stage.
Star. I got
but
you.
Anyway, back to this, what I was saying was once Bowling for Soup got a hold of it, there were a few lines that they changed, and I think that that's one of them. And the Ozzy becoming a, you know...
An actor. When did Ozzy become an actor?
We didn't write that. That was
okay.
Was Jared Riddick.
What's your favorite line in the song? Do you have one? It's such a great song,
Two Prozac a day.
Two Prozac a day. That was yours?
No.
Well, I'm trying to figure out what you wrote.
No. I don't know. We sat around the kitchen table and kind of spitballed on the second verse. So... There's lines in there that
your wife takes credit for one of the lines.
Yeah, she didn't get the credit on the album label,
John,
but she was because she was in love with George Michael, right? George Michael.
Yeah.
So there's a line about that in our version.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the hand on a member of Duran Duran that was put in by the guys from Bowling for Soup. So I think that replaced the.
I got to listen to your version. Yeah. All right, that's my homework. John Allen is here. We're drinking beer. We're at 1623 Brewing. We're in the heart of Eldersburg, where I had a girlfriend in 1987. I didn't even know where Eldersburg
was.
I'm going to tell that story later because it's the only thing. When I come to Eldersburg, I think of Dante Liberatore, and I think of my girlfriend in 1987, and I think of Mike McKelvin from 1623 Brewing. We're out here having some beer. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. Also, our friends at Curio Wellness are putting us out on the road. My 27th anniversary of WNST is August 3rd. It's also my mother's birthday. It's my cat's birthday. And we're going to kick off 27 of my favorite things to eat in Baltimore. So some of those John has actually dined with me on.
27?
Yeah. We're doing the show in a lot of different places next month. Some of my favorite places in town. We're back at Beaumont. I'm going to feature their fried lobster tail, which is unbelievable. But some of this isn't bougie. Some of this is like a snowball, cookies, a piece of pie, pretzels.
Did Snowball Joe used to come through your neighborhood?
Oh,
when you
man,
were
if
a
you
kid?
Got the lucky cup now.
Yeah,
you got
yeah,
the star
yeah,
on the bottom.
You know what I'm talking about.
Snowball Joe was the best, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's the benefits of growing up in Dundalk are great.
Awesome.
But even better, the benefits of growing up in Essex. Mike McKelvin's going to come in here. He's going to talk about Phil Weiser. Also got some Brian Jack stories.
Right.
I'm going to break a Brian Jack story out that I didn't know until in recent times that I will share with you as well that I don't think I've shared on the air. So
all
John
right.
Allen is here. We're always keeping the spirit of Brian Jack alive. Charm City Devils doing it at the end of September down at
Child's
Sound
Play.
Stage. Did I say Charm?
Yeah. You got the venue wrong and you got the band wrong.
We're not playing Soundstage. Where are you playing?
No, Wrecker. The Wrecker.
Child's play at the Wrecker, everybody.
I was with Paul Manna for like 3 hours the other night. He's going to shoot me.
So, hey, when you talk a lot, you're going to make mistakes. You know, we're all human, like we were saying about.
I don't make mistakes.
No.
I made an error. All right, back for more. We're at 1620. It's because I'm drinking beer. It's your fault. Back for more. We're Baltimore Positive.